It is Blue Jays home opener. Blue Jays and Mariners, and we are down at Rogers Center for Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Brent Gunning. And last year, I don't know what you expected out of this ballpark as far as the offense is concerned. The fences are different and just like mathematically, like physically closer in certain areas. You would have thought maybe it didn't play like one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks in baseball, but it playing like one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in baseball was a surprise.
Yeah, I don't think that's what anybody had drawn up there. I don't think like the I don't know if the khakis get involved with like ballpark dimensions.
But I think they do.
But if they did, I don't think that's the way they drew it up there. Yeah, it was quite honestly pretty jarring, and you know, I don't. Physics is weird, so I don't. But
physics
I don't expect.
Brent Gunning, physics is weird.
Yeah, that's a very Brent Gunning take. But like, I don't expect the infield seating configuration changing to affect the way the ballpark plays.
Yeah.
That I mean, right? You said it to me like I'm like, oh, so dumb to say physics is weird. No. And then I asked you the question that I was kind of tiptoeing to, and you're looking at me like, I don't have an answer for that.
All right, I'm going to have an answer that sounds dumb and might be dumb, but there's twofold things.
Give it to me. You can't sound dumber than I did, so
okay,
go for
one. Okay, when the roof is open, the airflow maybe is different.
See, this is why I said physics is weird.
Okay, and two, if there's just like physically less matter in the infield,
okay,
gravity perhaps is lesser.
No. Now we're out. Unless Neil deGrasse Tyson is going to descend from the heavens here, which I don't even think he believes in, to correct us on this, we should probably move on. But I don't think it will impact the way like the offense plays.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Here's what I think is going to impact the way the offense plays. Just things like normalizing, okay? Rogers Center last year, according to StatCast, the 23rd easiest place to score in baseball.
Okay.
So that's bottom seven in all of Major League Baseball. But what you can do on the StatCast page is you can do single season, which nobody does, and you're not supposed to do.
No.
Or you can do three-year rolling average, which is what you're supposed to do, because it takes multiple years for these things to even out. So you cannot take, according to the people who know, according to the big brains, you cannot take a single season and extrapolate how a ballpark plays, especially when we're getting used to what this is.
I would agree with that. We do small sample sizes in a season. But, yeah, for a ballpark over the course of its life, 81 games, pretty small sample size.
Yeah, it is. But, yeah, today is the debut of the new look Rogers Center. Happy to be joined now by Marnie Starkman, Blue Jays VP of business operations. It's yet another opening day. Thanks for doing this. This is exciting.
Thank you for having me. We're so excited to get this going.
Yeah, Marnie, I'm sure like me, we've spent lots of time in this Rogers Center under the previous configuration. Can you believe that this is the same ballpark that we attended 3 years ago?
No, I can't. I had a moment last night before I headed to the hotel to bed where I just looked out and just, felt so much pride, I think, just on what's been accomplished, I think, absolutely over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
But more specifically, since, you know, the day we stopped playing, what's happened here has been incredible. Double shifts, 2,500 workers. Incredible work by our Blue Jays staff to just make this happen. And we keep saying it was about 18 months of work done in 5 months. So I can't wait for fans to come in. I hope when they come in, they see how well phase one and two look together. And then really just sit in the seat, right? Like, it was all about the seating bowl this offseason, and I hope that fans can recognize the difference.
Yeah, so I think, obviously, when people came last year, so much of the changes was focused on, I mean, not that this year's different in terms of the fan experience, but it was, you know, different seating areas or public areas or different bars in the building. You know, here now it seems, like you said, much more on the infield seating. What is the thing you're kind of most excited to show off about it when fans come in today?
Yeah, I think, look, we've made some refinements to our outfield district as well. We had such positive success there the first year, and that will still be bumping, and hopefully it remains the place to be. This offseason was really about making this a ballpark. So although we'll still have large events, I think Like, you know, the bowl used to rotate for yes. other events and was really meant also for football. So the real focus has been just the reorientation of the bowl, the seats, you know, looking at the mound and home plate because you are here to watch a ball game, all the drink rails around the concourse, and then really what we heard, more leg room, wider seats, yep. cup holders.
Yeah.
So that was really, you know, that's really what the focus is. And then what our premium fans will see is what's going to be below. So obviously we needed to get the bowl intact before we could start building below. So player facilities, I would say, are 85% there. And then the amenities below are starting to be built for those 1,600 fans.
Yeah, what I noticed most was walking through those 100-level seats was the difference in space that had between people's legs. Like, if you're obviously not during the course of play, after an at-bat, walking out to the aisle to go to the concessions or the bathroom, yeah, people aren't going to have to, like, scooch and you're still running into their legs. Like, there's a lot more room there.
Yeah, you didn't realize it, right? But even though we had done some small seat replacement since 1989, the tread depth, I'm learning all this construction language, was so narrow, right? Yeah. So really, that's what I think people don't realize is this bowl was taken down to nothing. Like, mm-hmm. really, then we dug down to build some of the amenities and then rebuilt the concrete, and we were able to do that on a different angle with wider aisles and rows. So hopefully that's what's recognized.
Yeah, I think when people sit in those seats, it's impossible to ignore. I wonder if there was ever a moment for you, because most people have had renovations done at their house. Mm-hmm. They've had contractors in. And generally, when they say something's going to be done at a certain time and for a certain price, it's not always the case.
My husband kept reminding me, it's the final touches, it's the final touches. They go in fast. And a few weeks ago, I was like, well, I hope so, or I'm not going to be here April 8th.
Yeah, like there's no backup plan, right? No. Like, what was there ever a moment where you were having trouble sleeping because you wondered whether this thing would be done in time?
Yeah, I think, look, we had an incredible partner in PCL, and I think they kept us posted. I mean, the biggest issue was when we demoed and dug, right? Because you really don't know what's down there, even though they tell you they've surveyed it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think
we had hardwood down there.
I think it was, I'm sure you guys know, but I led with an incredible leader, Anuk Kurnaratne, who's now with the St. Louis Cardinals. And I remember the moment when we looked out and it was literally, there was no stands. And I said to him, like, what are we doing? But even 2 weeks ago, look, I mean, you know, the reality is we have been on the road and we've had to, like, if you look at what's even been done the last 3 days, it's incredible. So I think, there were definitely some of those what are we doing moments, and some of those moments where you looked at each other and said, are we not working in baseball? but look, I mean, I grew up in this building and I walk around now, and I hope fans get to really experience it in the way that it was designed.
Well, and you know, you mentioned it, like you grew up in this building. I think for a lot of people in this city, like even people who wouldn't, I think, consider themselves like a rabid Blue Jays fan, it mm-hmm. is just kind of like a communal backyard. And I think one of the coolest things about it, and it's funny, I had this thought walking in, you know, like we talk about all the sports teams in the city and some have been around since, you know, 1900. But it's very cool to see, like, I was kind of here for almost all of this, and just to see the ballpark kind of become like a living, breathing entity. And, you know, change is almost always a good thing. And just to kind of see how it's evolved over the years, it just, I don't know, like it makes me, it's not really a question. It's just as we're talking here, it does make you feel like old, or not make you feel old, but it makes you feel appreciative of how much you've kind of got to see here and how different it is now.
Yeah, I think that was one of our intentions in the design, was like, look, we're still a ballpark and we still have our avid fan, and those fans are so important to us, and they're going to get to experience the game the way that they've wanted to. But then look, our job as a, you know, sports organization here and as a game of baseball is to get younger and make this place more exciting. And I think that's really the point, right? You can sit in a seat and watch three innings. You can go with your kids to the kid zone. You can have a drink on the drink rail and experience the game the way that you want to experience it. And that might be different with your buddies on a Tuesday night than with your family on a Sunday.
Can confirm.
Exactly. But that, you know, look, like that's what we have to do to grow our game. That's what we have to do to grow our fan base. And hopefully with these renovations, you know, they're that over the next 10 to 15 years, people can experience the game in different ways.
So what is left to do? is there much? Like, I think from just a viewpoint of this press box here, everything looks done, but there is some stuff underneath that still needs to be finished, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we're ready to play baseball today.
Yeah.
Good news
is. Good to know. Yep.
Good to know. Step one. So, yeah, that's all ready and good to go. What's happening is what's below. So the clubhouses are in great shape, better than I think we were expecting, so that we're ready to play ball and have all Major League Baseball requirements there. And then below, the premium clubs are still in full construction. So there's three clubs that seat the 1,600 fans behind home plate. I think that was a bit of a misconception. I think people thought we were creating this entire bowl of premium seating, and that's not the case.
Right. Yeah.
There's 1,600 seats, and remember, those folks that used to sit down there had to walk up 30 rows to use the washroom or do anything like that. So we're building the clubs below, and those will open mid-season. And so fans who are sitting in those seats will walk through a construction site today, and you'll get to see the work that's still happening. So that's, I think, the core part of the project. And then, like always, you know, we have tremendous support from our ownership team, and we'll continue to use our annual capital to, you know, focus on the fan experience. And so all of that is still really a thing in work. So ideally by like mid-July, the large project will be complete.
Yeah, you mentioned the player facilities there in terms of clubhouses. Is there anything else there in terms of like workout area that's still to be worked on or you've been able to make improvements on?
Yeah, so I mean, Mark is definitely the best person to walk you all through. I'll give him credit on that. I mean, he obsesses over it. And look, we need to be, you know, the best place to play. I mean, players have to make a decision to come to another country. And I think what we want to make sure is when they're here, their families and them as athletes are taken care of. So that work is still in progress. But yes, we had a lot of learnings from our player development complex in Florida. So took a lot of those learnings in terms of what we built over here. And because of the reorientation of the bowl, we had to move the clubhouses anyways. Yeah. So that work is still, I would say it's about 85% done. And we're looking forward to taking everyone through that hopefully in May.
So the price tag, what, $400 million?
We were just close to $400 million. I mean, what happens in a project like this is the scope obviously changes.
Yeah.
As you start to see, okay, well, in order for the phase two to look like phase one, we need to do these things. And then I think just in this market, you know, the reality of working double time. I mean, what people don't realize is how fortunate we were to have the roof.
Yeah.
We talked to our other teams who are, you know, trying to make renovations while it's snowing in the off season or dealing with rain and winds. We've been very fortunate. So yeah, we were just under $400 million. And honestly, like I said, the support, don't forget, this was all a privately
funded
project forgotten.
No, it shouldn't.
Not by me.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't. Because look, down the street, we got the Buffalo Bills building a whole new stadium. There's been lots of conversation about, some private profits, but public funding of stadiums. Mm-hmm. How important is it that no public dollars were spent on the near $500 million of renovations?
Yeah, as a taxpayer.
We all are.
But I would say, I mean, look, it was, you know, I mean, Mark has said this time and time again, the support from Edward and Tony has been incredible. But I think the other thing to remember in this is the speed to which we were able to work.
Yeah.
Right? Like a lot of times when it's publicly funded money, you're waiting years and years.
Checks
so your
balances.
Designs are getting dated. Yeah. And for us, we were fortunate. Once we were told go following the pandemic, you know, we went and we went quick. And that means that what we were able to design is still relevant because otherwise things get dated so quickly. And I think the other thing that's just a myth that we forget is how fortunate we are where we are in the city. Like people can take transportation here.
Yes.
We're in the heart of the city. You can head out to King Street for dinner after. All these things that, you know, a lot of ballparks are surrounded by parking lots, and we forget how fortunate we are at the location as well.
No, I mean, you mentioned the location, and it's the two most, to me, it's the two most obvious things about the ballpark that, again, there's a million things that make it great, but it's the location and it's the roof. It's like we were joking earlier about the first game at Exhibition Stadium and it's snowing, and like, I don't know, maybe that is kind of perfectly on brand and it's a great first game. You wouldn't want to have to deal with that every April. Like,
no, I mean, imagine the eclipse of the roof open during batting practice. We'd be in trouble today.
A little interesting, Yeah, that's a good point to end on.
Yeah. I mean, is this fine? Like, can you take a step back and take, like, a deep breath? I know it's not totally done in July. I guess it'll all be behind you. But I imagine this has been an insanely stressful couple of years putting this stuff into place.
It has. It has. But like I said, I mean, we have so much support. And what you all don't see are just the incredible people that, like, live and breathe Blue Jays and care so much about the fans that are going to walk through this door today. And I think that's really where most of the pride lies.
It looks great.
Thank you. Glad you guys got to see it.
Before we let you go, I'm going to put my co-host on the spot here. I don't know if you're taking requests, but
Music?
Poles.
Oh,
poles. Oh yeah, real metal foul poles.
So, okay,
poles.
I'll tell you the story then.
Okay.
So, the foul poles were actually supposed to be in place, and we wanted those because that was the final touch of making this look like a ballpark.
Yep.
But, you know, we have Taylor coming, and we have some big concerts. And actually, the reality is the way in which we need to get trucks in and move things for concerts, we need the poles to be able to move up and down.
Well, and
so that's why.
I would say, I did say this to him.
I'm not blaming it on Taylor Swift.
No,
I'm just saying.
You better not, because it's like, you've done a great job with the park, but they will come for you if you blame anything on her.
I know.
I will go as far as to say, like, I wouldn't be mad at a pole, but I do feel like the mesh net, it's like ballparks have little quirks, little things, and it's a weird thing for me to remember, but when I think of homers in this park, I see them scraping by the mesh more times than not.
The intent
don't rush to get rid of them, is all I'm saying.
The intent was a pole. It definitely causes more obstruction than this, but we would have done it. It was just once we actually looked at, we still need to get large shows in here, and we want to have big shows in here. So there were some things that we had to hold on to from 1989, and those were them.
I love it. Does Taylor, like, has she called you? Do you have her, does she show up on your phone?
I don't.
You don't have her contact?
I'm sorry, I do not, but we are excited to have her. We have an entire baseball season before her. Yeah. I keep reminding
everyone.
Hopefully a long one, yep, which is why she's in November. But yes, we are still excited to have Taylor.
Yeah.
But more excited for tonight.
Yeah. Yes. I can't wait. Can't wait to see baseball. Marnie, great job, and thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and a happy home opener.
There's Marnie Starkman, Blue Jays VP of Business Operations. All right, more of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, live from Rogers Center next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, live from Rogers Center, Blue Jays and Seattle Mariners. Blue Jays home opener. It's Ben Ennis. It's Brent Gunning. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Luis Castillo against Jose Barrios. Both the Blue Jays and the Mariners off to, I don't know if the Mariners would consider it a C-minus start. It might be a D for them because they had some home games. I think for the Blue Jays, C-minus is fair. Let's bring in Ben Schulman, radio voice of the Blue Jays. Ben, how's it going? Good to see you, man.
It's going great so far. Really.
Wait, how great?
It's going great so far.
Yeah, it's day
one at the ballpark.
No, it's going so well.
It's going just perfectly. I was about to say,
I'm
feeling comfortable right now. Back in the booth. No, it's going great. It's fun. It's exciting to be here once again. To be up in the booth right now, talking with you guys, a lot of fun. So I can't wait for this long home stretch.
I'm super happy that happened with us and not tonight.
Like, it has to be said.
It had to happen.
I was saying earlier on, like, I showed up. I've never been here at 5 o'clock in the morning, because why would I, right?
Yeah, I've never been here at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been here at 8:30 in the morning. Like, why would you need to be here at 8:30 in the morning? But these headsets are brand new, Ben.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Everything's brand new.
The 100 level. Them, our man.
Yeah, I saw him, taking the plastic off. It's just, like, it's a brand new ballpark feel, including the headsets.
Yes.
So although we broke them in for you.
I'm happy, you know, the booth hasn't really changed, and I think we got a good thing going where, like, there have been a lot of renovations over the years, but this is kind of Jerry booth.
You're right.
It's the same as it was before.
The desk
there are
is the
no
same.
More. Well, there's a little bit of loose wiring over there, but there's not a ton of loose wiring, but it stays untouched. My promotion reads for a sponsor that is not sponsoring the team right now is
awesome.
In front of me.
Sick.
So, it's great to be back.
It is like a time capsule. It's like frozen from the exact last time. And again, like, a lot happened here in the off season. But yeah, frozen to last year. So start of the season this year, we were saying kind of a C minus C start. It's weird. 4-6, if you just say the record, you go, that's fine. You come home 4-6. It doesn't feel like it's fine, though, and it doesn't feel like it's just been 4-6. What's been your read on the first 10 games of the season?
Yeah, purely on the record, I don't hate the record. I mean, there are teams who have gone through much easier stretches. Like, frankly, I think the Baltimore Orioles are either, 5-4 or 6-4, and they've played the Angels, the Royals, and the Pirates. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a very different start than
the world-beating Pirates.
Yeah, then going to the Rays, going to Houston, going to New York. But the way that they've been getting it done, obviously, I think is frustrating for a lot of people, and rightfully so. They haven't strung together consistent offense. They've had three kind of big days of 8-plus runs, and then they've had one other day or two other days where they've scored even three runs. and the other games they haven't reached that. So that certainly has been a concern for them so far. You know, I think that they need to get it going a little bit and start hitting with more consistency. We've seen, you know, I think a lot of talk went into approach last year.
Yeah.
I don't think the approach necessarily has been the problem.
Ben,
I mean,
they're top three in baseball in pitches seen per plate appearance.
And they're walking like crazy. Like, yes. I don't think they're swinging at pitches outside of the zone. I just think, frankly, John Schneider said it, and I think it's true. They haven't hit balls with enough authority yet. They're hitting a lot of ground balls. Obviously, that no-hitter is going to stick in people's minds. Mm-hmm. There wasn't maybe safe
for one-hitter.
Yeah, and the one-hitter. Save for Jose Abreu's kind of diving stop late in that game. There wasn't, you know, like a typical, a guy lines a ball and someone makes a diving catch, no-hitter play. They just didn't really hit the ball hard at all that night.
Yeah.
So they have to make an adjustment. They're hitting really well against fastballs and not really against anything else. They have to figure out a way here to start hitting the spin.
Yeah, and I think people are right to have question marks about the bottom of the order and whether it can produce enough, and especially considering the offseason they had and considering the questions around the offense going into the offseason. What I think is the area of optimism is that they're 4-6, and they've looked as inept offensively at times as they have, with the top four outside of Justin Turner not hitting, too. Like, those guys, like, does anyone question whether Bo Bichette is a good hitter? Because I don't.
No.
Like, and you can question whether Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is ever going to be the 2021 version. He's not a 190 hitter. So, yeah, that part of the offensive start is not sustainable.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I know there's a lot of attention on the bottom half, but frankly, I think the top half has been the main reason right now that the Blue Jays haven't scored runs. I mean, most teams are not driven by their guy hitting in the seven spot. You want him to be good. Don't get me wrong. If you're the Dodgers, that's Teoscar Hernandez. But in most situations,
nice.
I did that one just to jab.
they don't need jabbing right now, Ben.
I know. I'm excited.
I've seen my mentions. Like, this fan base is, they're...
People are angry, and I understand why. It's a very similar team to last year, so I think in a lot of years where a team would get a fresh start necessarily, not necessarily this team does, because they, you know, end up with a lot of the same guys. If those guys can get going, I think that you'll see more offense. I mean, they were not the offense they should have been last year. They weren't like bottom of the league like they are right now. They were 14th in baseball in runs per game.
And like the outside of like the run scoring was middle of the pack and not as good. But like some of the other numbers like WRC plus
were high.
Yeah, they were actually like a good offense.
It was runners in scoring position at times.
And it was weird, like the difference between them and like the vaunted Orioles offense. It was the greatest of all time that put up 10 runs a game or so it felt like.
Yeah.
Like not that much of a separation.
They hit for a better average, I believe, than
more
the Orioles.
More runs, I think, than the Orioles.
The Orioles were top of baseball in batting average with guys in scoring position and slugging with guys in scoring position, and that helped them out a lot. The Blue Jays obviously needed to correct that, but they do need to hit more. I think we saw a little bit more from Vlad. We saw a lot more from Bo and George, I would say, in the last couple games than the previous two. You know, George had hits in all three games in New York. Bo in the last two games, I think he was like two hits and a walk in game two, and then a walk and two hits in game three or so, or two walks and a hit in game three, something like that. So he's starting to get it going, and who knows, you know, the neck thing and stuff might have just slowed Bo down a little bit to start the year. But yeah, they need more out of the top guys for sure. And then I think you start to worry about what's going on with the bottom guys.
Yeah, it's just, I think the reason why there's so much frustration as well is that, again, like to your point, it's a similar team, although it's not like IKF is here and Justin Turner. Like there are certainly a handful of new faces, but the core of the team is mostly unchanged. But I think the reason it's so frustrating is because and again, it's a long season. These things can, in theory, change. But once again, we're staring in there, and I pulled it up this morning. It's like their BABIP with runners in scoring position, they're second or third last in baseball right now. And the problem with that stat is, depending on what you believe, you can look at it and tell yourself one thing or another.
Yeah.
If you believe you're having good at-bats and you have talented hitters, you're going, well, that there's no way that can't normalize. But we've seen this movie before where they have had that low number, and it's not been a little blip. It's been over the course of a big sample size of a full season. So I think that's why there's kind of so much consternation right now.
For sure. I mean, BABIP's a tricky one, batting average on balls in play, because if your team's, you know, and I know some people are going to groan at all these numbers, but if your team's exit velocity is high.
No, I hate numbers the most, and I brought up BABIP. So
if your team's exit velocity is high and your BABIP is low, you're like, okay, we're hitting the ball hard and getting unlucky, we're hitting it at guys. But their exit velocity isn't that high. If you hit balls soft, your batting average on balls in play is not going to be high, because at the end of the day you're hitting a lot of ground balls or you're hitting lazy fly balls to center field. It's not like, you know, they're exactly teasing home runs a ton of the time. They have, you know, there were a couple hard liners, like Turner had a few fewer hits this past series than the ones before, but he like smoked a ball with the bases loaded at Alex Verdugo, had a liner caught, I think, on a leap by Anthony Volpe at short. So you're like, okay, he probably deserves more hits. But as a whole, I don't think you've seen that so far. They have to figure out a way to hit the ball harder, frankly. Mm-hmm. And it's really simple and it's really complicated in another way, like BABIP, where, you know, it's if they can hit the ball harder, hitting the ball hard usually generates hits. That's why at the end of the day, people not just in Toronto but outside of Toronto are so fascinated by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because he hits the ball hard constantly. Now, he was hitting it too much on the ground last year, but when you hit the ball hard,
but the launch angle was the highest of his career.
I know
last
it was weird, and there was some stuff I heard like, well, he's hitting the ball too straight at people,
or that like it didn't travel as far to center field was the
as
issue
it should, yeah, as it should have. And then I look at other stuff, and it's like, well, he actually hit as many home runs to center and right as he did last year, but not enough to left, so he should be pulling the ball more. Yeah. But I kind of think of him as like a little bit more Miguel Cabrera than maybe like a pure home run hitter where he hits a lot of line drives and they get out. So it's complicated, and then it'll look simple if they start hitting the ball hard. But they got to get something going here. And hopefully, you know, they start to get it going against Seattle, who, like you guys mentioned, has not performed very well to start the season either. Another team with playoff expectations. They were caught one game out of the playoffs, kind of like the Blue Jays were a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They don't want to make their return in 2022 after 20 years a one-off thing. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, on both these teams to really start to get going.
Yeah, and Luis Castillo off to a rough start in his first two starts of the season, although we've seen him be pretty dominant.
He's nasty.
Yeah, but the guy they traded him for got dinged with like an 80-game PED suspension. So maybe not the worst. I don't know.
Yeah. If you go back to last season, a team that's struggling wouldn't necessarily want to return to this building because the Blue Jays did not. I mean, the whole season was not a great offensive season for the Blue Jays, but specifically in this new configuration at Rogers Center, which didn't make a ton of sense, honestly, And it wasn't everybody, but it was two guys specifically that changed their entire years. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Dalton Varsho. You remove the home splits from their season, or they do the same thing they did on the road at home, or like you're supposed to do, slightly better. And then those two guys had good seasons. They were like at least 100 points down at home in OPS, both guys. Is that like, how do you view that? Because on the one hand, you should just view that as a weirdo blip. But this last year was the first time we saw this ballpark be configured differently. Maybe it's not as offensively friendly as we once believed.
Yeah, it's hard to know right now. Like I lean blip over making big declarations yet, because when you know, like StatCast kind of has their stats on which parks are hitters' parks and which are pitchers' parks. Like obviously Colorado's right at the top. You have big ballparks that are at the bottom, like in Oakland, and they like to do their stat in like 3-year averages. Yep. They bring 3 years together and figure out the hitting environment. So 1 year I think is a smaller sample than it might seem, even though they played 81 games here. But maybe, you know, they looked at the new configuration, and I don't know. I'm just speculating. I don't know this for sure. Maybe they tried to hit differently because it looked more inviting to certain places. I mean, in theory, you know, kind of left center and right center for Guerrero are going to be two of his biggest power zones.
Yeah. And you would think that they would have thought about, you know, the current hitters on this team when configuring the fences.
I think so. I think so. I mean, it is a long-term project, but I definitely think that they did it. It was weird. I mean, they were a better team overall on the road than they were home also. They were like 11 games above 500 on the road and I think 3 games above 500 at home. My math isn't right there, but it's close. 5 games above 500 at home. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes this year, because lower wall should provide them some opportunity to hit more homers. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't. You know, and we'll see, you know, sometimes there's talk about how often the roof is open and how often it's closed, and does the ball fly better when it's open? I don't know that there's ever been like actual science to prove that, but that's what the general like thought is. So maybe the roof was closed a little more often. I haven't really crunched the numbers on that at this point, but it'll be interesting to see, because I mean, they haven't hit well on the road, so maybe it's a flip.
Down with that. That'd be cool.
There's a great minor league line, at least, that it's if you're going to be bad on the road. So, hopefully, you know, and they haven't been bad. It's too early to say that, but
good.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. So if they can get something going at home here, they have plenty of time to work it out. 10 straight games. They're going to get the Colorado Rockies in here.
Yeah, looking forward to that. That'll
that
be a
could
good
maybe
one.
Get some confidence going.
Maybe
for
bring
them.
my 8-year-old to that game.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, and remind him that Chris Bryant used to be a prominent player in Major League Baseball.
One day.
We'll have to wait and see. I'm not sure on the ballpark.
Let's say it is a pitcher's ballpark. Are we sure that's the worst thing for this ball club with the starting staff that we think they have? And obviously, it's a long term project. To your point, it's like, yeah, I would think they'd take some of the hitters into consideration when putting it together, but it's, you know, over the lifetime. But for this iteration of a Blue Jays team, I would actually think it'd kind of be more successful or want to be in more of a pitcher's park, wouldn't you?
I think you could definitely make that argument. I mean, you look at Baltimore, they leveled their wall and moved it back 20 feet in left field because their pitchers were not great, and they were giving up home runs and threw a lot into left-handed hitting offensive players and allowed fly ball pitchers who typically give up home runs to come in and give up really long fly balls instead. So I think as long as you know what you're dealing with and they have a good handle on it, they can mold it to how they'd like to. They're not going to do something as extreme as Baltimore and kind of, in my opinion, like really make a beautiful ballpark a lot uglier. But I think that if you know what you're dealing with, which I'm sure they have more than enough people studying everything to do with this, that they can build their ball team over maybe even a couple years to kind of get to the point where they exploit their ballpark.
Yeah. Where are you on the pitching for this team? Because we've seen some great performances. We've seen some not so great performances. We've also seen a guy in Kevin Gausman be pitching with diminished velocity, but him saying all the right things and then going back 12 months ago and looking at that start in Kansas City. There was as much questions as there were about the offense being able to produce at a higher rate than a season ago. There was also a question about, okay, what if like Vladdy does hit the ball better at home this season? Isn't there also a reasonable case that the pitching would take a step backwards, especially with the health, considering the year they had a season ago?
Certainly. I think we're already seeing the health side of it. I mean, the fact that, you know, they went to Bowden Francis because he pitched so well in the spring, but they also, like, there wasn't much of a competition. Alec Manoah was not healthy at that point, and they didn't have to deal with that last year. Whether Manoah was on the team or not did not have to do with health. So I think that from a health standpoint, you could see regression. You know, I think it's reasonable to wonder if they pitched so well last year. I mean, a couple guys had career seasons. Is there, even if it's a small step back, just a small step, I think they were hoping to counter that by having a bump up in their five-starter production and maybe being able to kind of replace that overall. In the short term, I would say I have some concerns about the pitching. In the long term, I don't. I mean, we talked before we went on. You know, Kevin Gausman, weird start. Really unfortunate because that's one of their better offensive days, and they end up losing 9-8. But in the long term, I'm not too worried about Gausman. He was kind of trying to pull off something that really is hard to do, which is go into a season after pitching once in spring training. Like, that is just not very easy. He's, you know, in his mid-30s. He's thrown 1,500 innings, more than that, to this point. So if he's not injured, which he's not, it sounds, then I think he'll bounce back, whether it's the next start, I don't know. But I think the long term of Kevin Gausman this season is good. Love the way Berríos has looked so far. Kikuchi really had a good second start. I think you're starting to see him look like himself again, really use that curveball well, which he used a ton last year. Bassett hasn't had the two greatest starts. I thought the defense really let him down in the first one.
Like, oh, yeah. There was the double play that changes the whole game.
And he gets hit for an earned run on that play. Yeah. Like, one of the runs is unearned, but one of them is earned because you can't assume a double play in the world of errors.
I assumed it in my head.
But, yeah, you know, like, and then later there's another error, which they call a base hit because Bo is deep in the hole. But if Vlad scoops it or if that throw is made on the air, that guy's not on. He doesn't score. Yep. So I thought Bassett's been a bit better than the numbers have shown. I have a lot of faith in him as a guy who's just been very consistent throughout his career pretty much. And then, you know, they do, you know, have to, you know, try and figure out, can they get Francis to keep them in games a little bit longer than the first two? It's his first two major league starts. I think he's still got a little bit of time. You know, wasn't the greatest rehab appearance of all time for Alec Manoah, but it starts a 30-day clock where they're going to have to make a decision in 29 days, I guess now, whether they want to, you know, keep him in the minors, bring him up to the majors. There's Yariel Rodriguez, who also could be built up a little bit more. So they do have some questions there about what they're going to do with five, and then they just need to get the bullpen guys healthy. I have all the faith in the world. I actually think the bullpen's been really good for the most part to start the year.
I don't disagree.
And they're missing their two biggest guns pretty much. So when they get everyone healthy, I got a lot of faith in the pitching. Again, it's just kind of these couple weeks, and maybe that's the same thing for Danny Jansen in the offense. We'll just have to wait and see.
Man, I know it's 29 days from now, but I think I know which way that Manoah decision is trending. I just can't imagine what they would have to see between now and then to bring him back up. It seems like the point I was making earlier is that, you know, if he goes out in that outing and he has a, not even a great outing, but just a good one, a stepping stone, you can start saying, okay, here's kind of the path, the plan. But with every bad outing he has, it feels like it exponentially makes it longer and longer.
There's bad, and then there's like walking the first four hitters with like two strikes thrown in there and a hit by pitch and, you know, throwing no strikes. Like, there's bad. Like, I can
there's
stand
bad.
And then there's bad. But like, I can stand a world where it's like guys feeding the strikes on you. You can argue, oh, well, they're just teeing off. They're, you know, cheating on the first pitch fastballs. And he gave up like four home runs or something. There's bad. And then it's like the one thing that you're supposed to do, throw strikes, you can't do like right out of the gates. That's concerning.
Yeah, I think it's concerning. I mean, if, you know, but if he goes out and his next three minor league starts are good.
Yeah.
I think they're going to put him on the ball club. Like, I'll be honest. I mean, the ceiling, and again, I know we've all heard about it, but this, there are not that many guys who have that ceiling. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are great, great pitchers in the Blue Jays starting rotation. One of them has been a Cy Young finalist other than Alek Manoah. It's Kevin Gausman. And, like guys who are going to make $200 million throughout their course of their career will never, a lot of them, finish a Cy Young finalist. So I think if he can rein it in, the command being the biggest part, the hits are the hits, like you guys said. I mean, it's his first start. If he goes in there and he has literally no scout because it doesn't matter, and he's just throwing fastballs and stuff, the guys tee off. I saw it when I was at High A with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Mm-hmm. Blake Snell got rocked in a rehab start. It's like he went out a week later and dominated. You know, it wasn't a problem.
I was going to say some MLB GMs would tell you he's not very good.
Yeah. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, if he can get it in the zone, they'll give him a shot. There are other options, though. They're deeper than they were before, and that's a good thing for the ball club overall that I think they have a couple different places to go.
So Rodriguez, it seems to me, I mean, I guess Mitch White is the other obvious option there. Like, how do you think what Rodriguez is doing in Buffalo affects the leash on Bowden Francis? I don't think they're ready to, you know, throw him overboard quite yet, but I also don't know that we go four or five starts deep into a year if they continue to look like this. How much do you think it's about kind of what Francis does to keep his job versus maybe a guy like Rodriguez maybe forcing the issue a little bit?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. I mean, if Bowden can keep them in ball games, like, I think he's going to get this month at least, you know, and if he can keep them in ball games, then I think he's got a good shot to stick around. But if they really, you know, if it's five or six earned runs the next time out or something like that in limited innings, then they want to win this year. Like, they understand the point that they're in terms of the window. And I don't think they'll let things go too long. Rodriguez is a weird case because he didn't pitch last year. And I think that a big reason why he didn't even start in the bullpen with the Blue Jays potentially is because they don't want to hurt him.
Yep.
He's on a 5-year contract with them. They want him to be valuable going forward. But they also understand that this year and next year might be the two most important years of that deal. It's very possible unless, you know, there are big moves coming that we haven't seen yet or extensions coming that we haven't seen yet. So I think that if he keeps pitching well, he's going to force his way to some part of the team if they need him in the rotation. Then maybe he'll be in the rotation. If not, I could easily see him being in the bullpen as a guy who gives length, but not like a long guy in terms of mop-up, as a long guy in terms
a
of
a long,
like,
leverage guy.
You know, like, you, your starter is having a tough one. Yeah, you know, and you need like Andrew Miller kind of, which I don't want to like.
Oh, he's Andrew Miller?
I don't want to throw that on him. But you know, like, if you can get two high leverage innings out of him every 2-3 days or something like that, that might be a big deal. Because
I would gladly take 2015 Andrew Miller.
Yeah, oh my gosh, would I too? Would I 2015, 16, whatever you want from him. But, you know, I think that, you know, they've already made some moves that essentially have cost them extra money in terms of, like, taking Vogel back and retaining Votto. I think that they're pushing to try with the team they have to win as much as they can. And so that could push Rodriguez up to the majors as soon as possible.
Yeah, the time is now. Like, no messing around here. And we've seen it at times with the lineup construction. Like, Dalton Varsho, a fifth hitter, it didn't last very long, right? Like, Kevin Biggio hitting fifth. We didn't see, you know, David Schneider start the next night after the home run against Josh Hader. But we've seen him
be he started more, the day after that.
Yeah, he's been more a part of the conversation. I mean, to that point, yeah, with the urgency of winning this season and making the playoffs and not letting things snowball. How much influx do you think the bottom, you know, five players in the lineup, how much influx is that lineup on a day-to-day basis?
I think it's going to change a lot, to be honest. I think they've built the team to make it change a lot. Like, they have guys that play – they have a lot of guys that play a lot of different positions with some different skills. And I think that if they did that on purpose, which I believe they did, then it makes sense to, you know, hey, there's a left-hander or there's a guy who works down in the zone a lot, like Marcus Stroman. That's when you want Davis Schneider
in the lineup. When are we ever going to see the numbers on the swing
path? The swing path?
Yeah, because they got the swing path
numbers.
Take
a lot of side-by-side video, basically, and you know, work it out there. But, I mean, we've seen Ernie Clement already kind of hit his way into the lineup a lot more. I mean, we've even seen Isaiah Kiner-Falefa be in the outfield. I think they'll use the bench a ton in a lot of games. I mean, in that 9-8 game that they lost, they used the whole bench.
Yep.
And actually, like, a lot of it worked out very well. Brian Servin came in as a pinch runner, advanced on two wild pitches, and scored. Kevin Biggio had an RBI single in the ninth inning, you know. So a lot of things that they can do with that bench. I think it's going to change a lot, and I think in-game it's going to change a lot. I would say that all 13 guys on this team, you know, maybe the catchers know a bit of a pre-planned schedule, but all 13 guys on this team should be ready to play every game.
I was just going to follow up on that. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
No, you're fine, buddy.
I was going to follow up that, yeah, I don't think it was in the plans to play Justin Turner at third base already twice, start him at third base already twice this season. That was the one area I was like, ooh, I mean, if the offense is a problem, best way to get another bat in the lineup would be to put, one of your offensive producers who can capably play third base, put him in the lineup, which means, I mean, they're not playing the guy they gave a 2-year contract to in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa if Kevin Biggio or Ernie Clement is playing second base, but it allows you to play like a Daniel Vogelbach, or maybe when Joey Votto's here, play a Joey Votto. You can get another bat into the lineup. The question is, can old like 39-year-old bones Justin Turner handle, 20, 30 games at third base? I mean, if he can, and we'll see if it's a tougher toll for him at Rogers Center on turf, but doesn't that seem like an obvious place? If you can squeeze a few extra starts for Justin Turner in the field, like you can help your offense, it seems pretty significantly.
Yeah, I think so. I think Turner, I mean, we've already seen it. I think he's going to be at third more than people expected. Mm-hmm. I at least, show out
more than they expected. They said 10 times.
Yeah, well, that I didn't believe them, I'll be honest. when Sho Ali, our colleague, asked some people for bold predictions, I don't remember the exact number, but mine was something like Turner ends up in like 65 to 70 games in the field.
Wow.
And not starting, to be clear.
Yeah. Also, just as a broadcaster, good job. That's a nice bold prediction.
Thank you.
I hate it when people come in and they're like, I think this very minute thing might happen. No, that's a good
one. Plant's going to lead the team in home runs.
Good job by you.
But I think that Turner, he had a rough first game at third. And he subbed into a game late for his first game of third. He had an error in his first start also. But he played third. I forget if it was Houston or New York. I think it was New York. And they got Vogel back in as the DH.
Yes.
He looked fine. He made a couple plays over there. I mean, this guy has played, like 1,000 games at third base. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be the rangiest third baseman on the planet? No, he would tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But, he certainly is more than capable between the ears to play that position. His arm still looks fine. And I think sometimes you sacrifice a little bit of defense for a little bit of offense.
Yep.
His old team, the LA Dodgers, I mean, look, they're great players, but they're playing Max Muncy at third and Mookie Betts at shortstop. Like, neither of those guys should be playing those positions
doesn't
in an ideal
matter.
World.
Mash.
But they believe until yesterday they had scored like 5-plus runs in every game because they're ridiculous. So I'm okay with Turner playing third when they need it. I also think they want to get Springer some DH days.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to come a time when they're going to want to give Vlad at least a DH day. He plays pretty much every single day. Bo plays pretty much every single day. So I think you need that flexibility because I'd rather Turner be at third than be out of the lineup altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm there with you. You know, just thinking about that third base competition, one of the guys who's going to factor in there, at least for now, and part of it anyways, is Ernie Clement. And he feels like he is right out of, like, central casting for this year's fan favorite guy.
Oh, yeah.
He has such low expectations that nothing's ever going to be his fault. He already has a pinch hit homer. He's flying around out there, and he can pick it. He kind of feels...
And he's like, a localish guy,
yeah,
too.
And he really does feel like he
Rochester?
Was created...
Yeah, it's
like,
okay.
Localish.
Okay, I'll take it.
I mean, when all these guys
you
are
take
from
it more
Florida
than me, but we'll take
California.
It. But it does feel like he was created in a lab to be, like, a fan favorite type for this particular team. Like, obviously, obviously everybody's going to gravitate to your Bos and your Vlads, but he feels like the, you know, he's just like really carrying the torch from Santiago Espinal, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of things that people like. I mean, first of all, he's a talented defender. I think that a lot was talked about his bat. Mm-hmm. There was one game last year where he made two errors at short, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, I don't know if this guy can play defense. He can really play both at short, third. He can play second as well. He also can go in the outfield, and that helps them out a lot, too. And then, you know, he's exactly what a lot of people are going to like when you get a fan favorite. Throwback. Contact guy. Lots of singles. Like, you know, the dad who watched contact hitters in the 80s is going to tell you to follow that guy right now. And it's good. I mean, he's a good player. He's a great guy. He should get all that respect. He's worked really hard. Mm-hmm. He was released by the Oakland Athletics last spring. Yeah. Like, you know, that for a lot of people, you could have looked at that and thought, I don't know if this guy's going to come back up. Ooh. Reworked his swing entirely with Matt Haig.
Yeah.
Back up. And he's been, you know, maybe short of Turner, the most productive hitter so far for the Blue Jays and the highest average hitter of any Blue Jays so far this year. So I think it's great. I feel like he's going to be in the lineup more and more and more as the season goes on. There's going to be more of a scout coming up. Mm-hmm. That's going to be something he's going to have to deal with. Not that he was a rookie this year. He had played in the majors. But, you know, you get into a series and you're like, whoa, that guy's hitting 350. Yep. All of a sudden, you're going to spend a lot more time on figuring out his weaknesses and trying to figure out what he's doing.
You're going to kill me for this, but the second you said he was released by the A's, I had immediate Simone Benoit thoughts of like, also ran team, couldn't catch on with them, comes here. I don't know. I've seen crazy things.
I have a lot of time for Ernie Clement, and especially the defense. It's going to allow him to play in lineups a lot more easily than Davis Schneider, where the fit is not like seamless. But I've also looked at both guys' minor league track record, and Clement, he's always hit for a pretty high average, but never walked, never hit for any power. Like the Davis Schneider thing, I can't get like what he's been throughout the entire course of his professional life. Like that there's a real potential that you have something there offensively. Where are you on the Schneider discourse?
So I think that Schneider can be a bit more than a guy who hits against lefties, but I haven't hated their deployment so far. I mean, at the end of the day, look, we all thought maybe he'd be in the lineup after Hader. He wasn't. They put him in the lineup the next day. He went 0-for-4, like against a right-handed pitcher.
His numbers froze him. This is what we're doing with him. Like, he can't have a bad day.
I know. Well, he can't have a bad day, but he can't have a good day and not hit cleanup and like pitch, play second and center field without it being a problem, too. I think that he's a young player, still kind of getting into his groove. He knows what he is. Other people know what he is as well. I think, like, I want him to play almost every day. I don't know if I want him to start almost every day. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of potential there. But I expecting him to drive this offense for me is a dangerous thing to do. I don't think it's very fair to him, to be honest, as a guy who has played 45 major league games, something like that, even less, because he played 35 last year.
He's not driving, but like you can give him the map. He can help navigate a little bit.
No, like certainly he should be a part of it. Don't get me wrong. And look, if you know, you talk about the top four, let's say Danny Jansen's healthy, he's fifth. You know, you probably throw a lefty in there to get a little left right. Maybe that's Biggio. Then you have Schneider seventh. That's intriguing. Don't get me wrong. It definitely helps, but I think that there's a bit of a healthy medium between what's going on now and maybe what people are clamoring for, where he's playing like 4 days out of six or something like that. Or maybe
five. I knew that wasn't going to be enough.
Four out of six is where I'm sitting sweet spot right now. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, he's played so few games; it's still really hard to know.
We'll have to wait quite a while until first pitch. But you will be here.
I'm going to get very comfortable at Starbucks.
Ben, this is great. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There's Ben Schulman. All right, Blue Jays and Mariners. Blue Jays home opener tonight. This has been the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sports at 590. The Fan.
Good morning.